Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The Agile Brand.
Welcome to Season 6 of The Agile Brand, where we discuss marketing technology and customer experience trends, insights, and ideas with enterprise and technology platform leaders. We focus on the people, processes, data, and platforms that make brands successful, scalable, customer-focused, and sustainable. This is what makes an Agile brand. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advising Fortune 1000 brands on MarTech, marketing operations, and CX, best-selling author and speaker. The Agile Brand Podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full-stack technology services, talent services, and real-world application. For more information, go to teksystems.com. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that my latest book, Priority is Action, 7 Principles for Better Strategies, Decisions, and Outcomes, is now available. In it, I give ideas and insights for leaders and teams that need to make meaningful progress on their priorities. After all, our priorities are what we do, not what we say we'd like to do. You can find Priority is Action on Amazon or learn more on my website, gregkilstrom.com. Now let's get on to the show. Today we're going to talk about the link between creativity and innovation and how leaders that empower their teams to tap into their own creative sparks can achieve stellar results while increasing their team's engagement. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Anne Jacoby, founder and CEO of the Spring Street Solutions Company and author of Born to Create, How Creativity Sparks Connection, Innovation, and Belonging in Our New World of Work. Anne, welcome back to the show.
So, Greg, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Yeah, looking forward to talking again with you, returning champion here. So why don't we start with you giving a little background on yourself as well as, what inspired you to write your book, Born to Create?
Oh, sure thing. Well, you know, I always start with the disclaimer that I have an unconventional background when it comes to being a business leader. I actually grew up in the performing arts, in the theater, and I went to the number one arts high school in the country, LOXA, and later majored in theater at Northwestern. So I kind of turned professional in the theater world in my youth. And by the time I got to New York doing it, I was pretty burned out and I was in my early 20s by that point. So this shows how little I knew about business. I thought joining a startup would be more stable. But truthfully, I stayed at that company for almost 13 years. And it really was a great home for me. And that's really where I discovered how applying creativity in business is essential. And that was the inspiration for the book. Kind of all of that training, all that discipline I had acquired, it applies to the world of business. And I wanted more people to have those tools.
That's great. So yeah, let's dive in here and, you know, start with, I know you gave some background, but, you know, in talking about creativity and that, that creative spark, how did you first discover your own creative spark and how has that evolved over time?
Yeah. Well, like I mentioned, I grew up in the arts and I feel like it was that sense of connectedness either to fellow cast members, the people that were co-creators, or the audience is really what did it for me. And when you translate that to the business world, you know, we think a lot about our customers. I know you're really focused on that customer journey and also fellow employees. I mean, that sense of connectedness, I think, is the spark that I try to keep top of mind.
Yeah. So you talk about the importance of connection in fueling creativity. Can you elaborate a bit on that and maybe give some tips for listeners on, you know, how do you cultivate meaningful connections in work and even in personal lives?
Yeah, good question. Well, a few years ago, I went back into the dance studio. I focused on ballet and kind of returning to those roots. And I think about a part in that class called adagio, which means slow. And in the book, I talk about death by adagio, right? It's this kind of dreaded part of that class, but we really are forced to slow down. And it's really, really hard. I think in life, we're all really distractible. We have a lot on our plates, but that's really where connection is formed to either ourselves or to others and also the world around us.
Yeah. So for those organizations that are able to kind of foster connections and things, how can they better support and empower employees to tap into their creative potential?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think creative teams really need to feel safe with each other. And that's kind of table stakes. So you take either a cast or you take a company or a startup team or, you know, a well-established Fortune 500 organization. Those teams need to be okay with taking risks and not worrying about being laughed at or ridiculed or worse, fired, you know, if their idea doesn't land. So I think it's that starting with a really psychologically safe work environment, ensuring that people trust each other. That's really the foundation to any kind of creative thinking or doing that I see.
So building on that psychological safety, then, you know, one of the concepts you mentioned in the book is creative confidence. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what does that mean? And, you know, those listening, you know, what does it mean to develop that?
Yeah, creative confidence. Well, I'll say it this way. Creativity in general is a deeply vulnerable act. It is really easy to be self-critical, whether you're a performer or a business leader. You know, anyone who's creating and generating new ideas that are novel and useful, it's really difficult. And it's easy to edit ourselves before anything gets out into the world. So, you know, my book talks a lot about moving through the discomfort of those moments, which are inevitable. I like to call them little love notes of resistance, you know, that kind of itchy feeling of, oh, this feels really uncomfortable. But it's almost like the more we do it, we do those hard things, we move through them, then the easier it becomes. So we can really build on doing the little things and then tackle bigger things down the line.
Yeah, I know that from my own experience where, I mean, these days I tend to run towards things that make me uncomfortable for better or worse, but usually for the better. I mean, that, you know, I think there's a difference between things that are just the wrong fit versus things that feel uncomfortable. I can't say I've mastered knowing the difference, but I've gotten better at identifying the two. Is that, you know, is that part of it too, of just kind of knowing, you know, because some of this also reminds me of, even outside of the realm of creative thinking, is just the idea of, you know, being okay with experimentation and testing and being okay with, because when you're creative, I mean, even the most creative minds and the geniuses that we think of, they've had some terrible ideas, right? So like, you can get it quote unquote wrong is probably the wrong word, but to even use, but, you know, is it kind of being okay with, you know, what they might call in the startup world, failing and kind of getting back up?
Oh, absolutely, Greg. Yeah. I mean, you're nailing it. It's kind of that comfort, that repeatable process of trying things, of putting out a lot of bad ideas and being okay with it, really learning how to fail and having the perspective of, huh, this didn't work. What can I learn from it? And I think it's that muscle that is deeply uncomfortable for most of us, but that is the true way to develop creativity that is so useful in our business world.
If you're like me, it's hard to keep up with all the trends, fads, and critical concepts that marketing and CX leaders need to know about. To help, I've partnered with some of the world's most notable MarTech thought leaders to create the Agile Brand Guides book series. These are short reads, 3 hours or less, on important topics like generative AI, customer data platforms, MarTech infrastructure evaluation, and more. They're available in print, digital, and audio formats, and quickly get you up to speed on critical topics that leaders and aspiring leaders need to understand. Search for Agile Brand Guides on Amazon or go to the Agile Brand Guide website at www.agilebrandguide.com. That's agilebrandguide.com for more. Before we get back to the show, I just wanted to remind you to hit the follow or subscribe button on your app to make sure you get notified when new episodes of this show are available. Now let's get back to the show. And so, you know, I think the word creativity, you know, I think there's often a lot of maybe misconceptions about what exactly it is or is not, and who is creative and who is not, and who's capable of creativity. And, you know, so I could keep going probably there, but you probably get what I'm saying. You know, what are, from your perspective, you know, what are some common misconceptions about creativity, and, you know, how can we overcome them?
Yeah. I mean, I think even for quote unquote creative people or people who consider themselves to be creative, there's a sense that, you know, I'm just going to have this spark of inspiration. It's just going to hit me and hit me over the head. But I mean, in reality, we all have the capacity to be creative. And the misconception that there are creative people and non-creative people, and, you know, we'll make sure that just the creative people touch certain parts of our work, you know, I think that's a big myth and totally bogus. And I think, you know, it takes a lot of practice and discipline wherever you are on the spectrum of being a creative thinker and doer. It takes that level of effort. And I think, you know, if we believe in the growth mindset, that our abilities are not fixed, that they can be developed, we know that creativity is just another one of those skills. And I think it's the combination of the creativity, the discipline, creating the right environment. It's the combination of all those factors that we really need to develop in our teams.
Yeah. And I mean, from my perspective, I feel like it kind of, it shortchanges some people that are, you know, they're not going to pick up a paintbrush and, you know, and knock out an amazing painting, but they're creative. You know, there's so many professions that are not traditionally thought of as creative or in the creative world. And yet creativity is what, you know, kind of puts certain people ahead of others. Is that, you know, how do you get over that barrier with people that say, I'm not, it's like, you know, people that say they're not good at math, or people that say they're not this or that, you know, people that say they aren't creative. How do you, cause that seems like a block towards building a broader culture of creativity, right?
Oh, for sure. And I think some people naturally, for, you know, maybe it's the way they were raised or, you know, other circumstances where they just resist the word creativity, and that's totally fine. Then we pivot to, it's about problem solving. You know, if you're solving a problem, if you're thinking differently about a challenge and applying a new solution, that's creativity. So I think it's about really connecting to the words that land with you, that you feel connected to, and developing that muscle. And I have yet to meet a company that doesn't want to continuously improve. And if you're going to improve, you need to apply creativity.
Yeah. And so that, another thing you talk about in the book is fostering a thriving creativity culture. And so, you know, what does that look like in, you know, in practice, and, you know, how might you coach a leader to cultivate that within their teams?
Yeah. Thanks for raising that, Greg. I mean, I think one of the benefits of my consulting practice is working with a ton of different team cultures and different dynamics. So I see a lot, right? I see a big range. And I've found that creativity cultures really have mastered the intersection of connection, innovation, and inclusion. So the people feel really safe with each other. They're inspired by each other, meaning they really hold each other to high performance standards, and they feel like they belong. And there's that really strong sense of community. So, you know, I'll give you an example just in action. If you're on a Zoom meeting with your team and you notice that people on the chat feed are contributing and they're lifting each other up, and maybe there's some, you know, gentle joking and, you know, building on each other's ideas, that is kind of a demonstration of a highly creativity culture oriented group. Whereas others, you know, you might have people are kind of cutting each other down, or they're critical, or worse, it's complete crickets. So that is just kind of a manifestation, kind of one symptom, if you will, of that kind of creativity culture that I've seen.
And is that, you know, some of that silence, can some of that be attributed to kind of what we were talking about earlier, is sort of that fear of messing up, or fear of doing the wrong thing, if that's possible? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're just disengaged entirely, which is not part of a creativity culture.
Yeah. What's the role of technology and, you know, our ability to be creative? But maybe there's some positives, maybe there's some negatives, but, you know, how do you see technology's role in, you know, either fostering or hindering, I guess, creativity?
Yeah. I mean, I think that is on a lot of people's minds, especially with AI and, you know, is AI helping creativity or hurting it? Or, you know, what's the role that tech plays here? My perspective currently is that tech can be a really great way to get people unstuck, right? You have a blank page. Maybe it's just daunting to you. You don't know where to start. Maybe technology can help kind of grease the wheels and get the flywheel going. But the kind of creativity that I focus on with a lot of my clients is really based on the human experience. And it's hard to expect that technology or a computer can really replace what we experience as humans. I could be wrong, but that's really where I try to focus.
Yeah, I mean, I agreed. I think it's, I try to look at it as kind of what you were saying at the beginning there is it's more augmentation. Mm-hmm. And also I think it's what I've seen in the creative process is it can play a really nice role in basically to go back to what you were saying, kind of getting unstuck from at certain stages, but it can be used at multiple stages. At this point in time, I don't think AI is going to replace the creative process, but I think it gets people thinking in different ways. And sometimes, you know, I've played around with many, many different things, everything from like trying to generate podcast questions for interviews. And, you know, I've got my own little thing running here, and, you know, I ask it for 10 questions and 7 are absolutely terrible, but there's 3 that are like, oh, that's really interesting. I wouldn't have thought of that. And so it's a starting point for a set of, you know, 7-8 more questions. And so, you know, it's, do you think that there's from the leaders that you talk with, because I know you work with, you know, a lot of leaders on some of this stuff, are they resistant to AI and automation and stuff? Or is it, you know, are you sensing more and more openness just as it seems to become more and more ubiquitous?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the jury's still out how organizations adopt and integrate AI. I think there's still a lot of open questions about privacy concerns and IP and real sensitivity around that. So depending on the company, I've seen leaders take different approaches to how much they embrace and apply the tools that we have at the ready and how many are kind of in wait and see mode. So we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. I think this year is going to, there's going to be a lot shaking out from last year was a big year of experimentation with lots of different things. I wrote an article about this too, but I feel like there's going to be a big reconciliation between playing around with stuff and actually, you know, operationalizing and or not, you know, just, you know, figuring out what makes sense or what doesn't. But
yeah. For sure.
So for your book, you know, what message do you hope that listeners would take away from Born to Create, and, you know, how can they apply the principles of the book to their own lives and work?
Yeah, I hope that people leave with more confidence about their capacity to be creative and really the urgency to make creativity and this creativity culture that we've been talking about a true priority to yield business results. I really do. I feel like this is a time to lean in to our human skills, creativity being chief among them. And I hope the book lights that spark for people.
That's great. Well, Anne, thanks so much for joining. One last question before we wrap up here. As a fellow author, I always like to ask about the process of writing as well. And so, you know, in writing your book, Born to Create, what did you learn through the writing process? Obviously, you're bringing a lot of knowledge to bear from your work and research, but, you know, what did you learn about through the writing process, and what might you do differently in writing a follow-up?
Wow. Well, first of all, I'm really inspired by folks like you, Greg. I mean, you're so prolific and have written so many outstanding books. It's an honor to join the club here. But, you know, having just wrapped up my audiobook recording, I think maybe shorten my sentences. I have some really long paragraphs.
I feel your pain. Yeah.
But kidding aside, I think I have built my own creative confidence through this writing journey. And my hope is that with my next book, my next project that I can lean into that confidence and really trust my instincts more. So that's, I think, where my energy is going to go.
Yeah, I love that. Well, again, I'd like to thank Anne Jacoby, founder and CEO of the Spring Street Solutions Company and author of Born to Create, How Creativity Sparks Connection, Innovation, and Belonging in Our New World of Work. You can learn more about Anne and her book, Born to Create, by following the links in the show notes. Thanks again for listening to The Agile Brand, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.gregkihlstrom.com. That's GregKihlstrom.com. While you're there, check out my series of best-selling Agile Brand Guides, covering a wide variety of marketing technology topics, or you can search for Greg Kihlstrom on Amazon. The Agile Brand is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, stay agile.
The Agile Brand.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.